Okay, our next speaker is Dr. Sarah Woolsey. She will be speaking on nicotine in 2018, the state of use in Utah. And this is, of course, a big topic. I think we've seen this. And Dr. Woolsey has actually spoken at this conference and been a part of this before. And we are very happy to have her back.
Thank you. All right, so it looks like mic's working. How's everybody today? All right, nicotine. Let's talk about Utah. And there are actually some really good things to talk about. And we'll talk about e-cigarettes. So just a thanks to my partners, those who have gone before me in developing these talks, and especially to the Utah Tobacco Free Alliance, who is continuing to work on policy and advocacy and keep us educated on this issue. So a cigarette is the only consumer product which, when used as directed, kills its consumer. You guys are laughing. Everybody pretty much agree. What if we substituted e-cigarette? Would you still agree? Would you laugh? How many of you would agree? When used as directed, e-cigarettes, okay. How many say no? Okay, how many say I don't know? Okay, good. Just my sort of test of the crowd to see where you guys are. All right, so no disclosures for me. Our learning objectives, we're going to talk about tobacco and e-cigarette use. We're going to talk about evidence-based techniques. And then we're going to talk about integrating the Utah Department of Health evidence-based cessation, which is really well supported. And I want Yvonne to raise her hand. She is here from the Weber-Morgan County Health Department. She is the tobacco cessation expert for this area. She has a table in the back. I'll refer to tools that she has. This is a very short talk, so we'll make sure you guys go back there and see her and get the tools she has, as well as check out some of the e-cigarette things you can look at. Many of us have never handled or seen an e-cigarette. So let's go by the numbers. So nicotine addiction, more than 1,200 of us are using tobacco each, or excuse me, we die from tobacco each year. 180,000 of us are using tobacco, so high numbers if we think about this, our population, but 70% of people surveyed in the anonymous surveys that the health department does, the CDC does, they say they want to quit. So the best news for us is that despite the rates of smoking, people are interested in quitting. And physicians and providers asking them about that and helping them do that makes a huge difference. These are our rates. They continue to be the lowest in the country. We are under 10%, which is quite amazing as a state. And we can say, whoa, that's great. Let's rest on our laurels. But when we go to this, these are disparities among people who smoke. So any of you who take care of populations like African American or black folks, Alaskan Native American Indians, gay and lesbian folks, people without insurance, their rates of smoking are actually higher than the average in the whole United States. So underneath our really great smoking rates in Utah are disparate populations. And again, I charge anyone who takes care of those populations to be good at this and to have a system in your office to offer smoking cessation support. This is how we're going to reduce disparities in health, especially cardiovascular death. Youth, okay? Take a look at this quote. In 1981, Philip Morris, today's teenager is tomorrow's potential regular customer. Okay? Anybody here take care of children, kids, adolescents? Yeah, okay, my fellow family doctors, pediatricians. Nicotine addiction is a pediatric epidemic. Most people that end up smoking or using e-cigarettes, or doing it before 18, and they become hooked. So again, really important prevention message there. By the numbers, in Utah, you'll see, unfortunately, our preferred youth route is vaping, and it's going up. We have one of the highest per capita experimentation and the regular use rates in the country, and we'll talk about that. This is a slide from Salt Lake County. The numbers actually are worse in Weber County, right, Yvonne? And she can talk about the, I don't know the number, but they're worse. You can see here the red line, the increase in e-cigarette use in youth as the preferred method of a smoke product. Also, THCs are there, but you can see alcohol reduced, cigarettes are actually pretty low. So vaping is a concern for our public health community because youth using this, there's a chance they become addicted to nicotine. And a drill down, CDC does a survey of youth throughout the country, and there's 3 points I wanted to highlight. This was just published last year. 39% of youth who used a vape product said they got it from a family or a friend. And a third of them said that the flavors, the bubble gum, the mint, the enticing flavors were a reason they tried it. And 17% thought they were less harmful than tobacco. So we're getting it from our friends. It comes in a flavored product that seems less harmful. We think it's less harmful. Okay? So a very concerning message for the public health community. There's a low risk of harm in these products, and youth are trying them, and then potentially using them, or using also conventional cigarettes. So I just want to get a couple of people, and probably my front row can shout out, what has surprised you so far? Is there anything, I want two people, just what surprised you so far? Yes.
That only 17% of people thought that e-cigarettes were less harmful. I would have thought more people would have thought that.
Okay. So he's surprised that it's only 18% of the youth thought it was less harmful. Okay, so he thought that would be higher. Good. Anybody else, something you're surprised by? One more. So a concern that there's people who are like, hey, I'll try this, even though it's bad for me. So, okay, good. So concern about this perceived harm, and more people are thinking it's safe, and we'll talk about that. Good. All right, now we're going to talk about ends. Who knows what an end is? Anybody? So electronic nicotine delivery system. So it's sort of the generic, all-encompassing phrase, and we need to have this phrase because it's pretty creative out there, and it's not just like an e-cig anymore or a vape. There's all these other things out there. So the generic phrase for this vaporized thing. So electronic cigarettes, hookah sticks, vaping, nicotine liquid is the juice. There can also be other chemicals in that. This is the new thing that many of us didn't learn about in med school because it didn't exist. This is an older picture, but it shows what they look like. The important thing to know is that it's a combustible device. It has a battery in it. Some injury occurs when they actually blow up or have a fault. And the juice has to be put into it. And where the juice is carried, babies can drink it or smell it and think it's good. And there's risk of toxicity with that. So it's a little bit different than your typical cigarette, which is going to be a combustible issue. This is combustible plus the e-juice. And again, if you want to see some and see some interesting looking ones, Yvonne has them at her table. So if you've never looked at one or seen the variety of characters and that sort of thing, take a look. These are Hello Kitty ones. There's one with a mustache. Here's a homemade one. And I think this is actually quite popular with teens, making them out of just homemade devices with the juice attached. This is a pretty benign looking cafe type thing where you can pick your juice, blend your juice. Pretty hip. And then there's even vaporware, which allows you to hide your electronic cigarette in a hoodie and maybe innocuously smoke that. So the concern is that this is a gateway to nicotine addiction. Since 2011, we've seen a fivefold increase in youth initiation or experimentation, despite increasing the law. A third of teens who used e-cigarettes in the past 30 days have never tried a cigarette. So again, that low perception of harm, like, oh, I wouldn't smoke a cigarette, but I might vape outside the ward. A recent study showed that vape and tobacco specialty stores are most likely to sell to teens. And again, if you want a good story, Yvonne is an FDA investigator for this, so you can ask her what she's found when she visits stores and what they're doing. This is a concern here. I just want folks to notice, and I have a highlighter, I think. Oops, nope. This one. Here, just the age is a little hard to read here, but the age of use, so the blue is vaping, and the red is the actual traditional cigarette use. So as you get older, maybe you're using more cigarettes if you're initiating vape. We don't know. But there's a concern that there's this trend happening with young people, and then we may see smoking rates rise in this, and it may be because they're trying e-cigarettes. So just a question, if this is related. Those numbers are strangely similar. We'll be watching that. Adults. Many of you treat adults. What adults are using vapes? In Utah, we see 60% of e-cigarette users are people who are conventional cigarette users. So we call it dual use. And many of those people are probably either trying to quit or they're smoking vape where they can't smoke a traditional cigarette because it's less smelly or whatever. Some farmer smokers are smoking e-cigarettes. And 15% of current e-cigarette users are not the usual people who would smoke a cigarette. So again, they're starting it when they wouldn't have smoked a cigarette. So is it because they're healthy? All right. So what do we know about e-cigarettes? So at the time that Kurt asked me to do this talk, it was like, what are we going to say that's new? And in January, there's actually a good review that's come out, the public health consequences of e-cigarettes. I personally have been quite frustrated with our national organizations and things not giving us clear guidance on what do we do with this e-cigarette thing and what do we tell our patients. Like, the patient materials haven't been strong except in the pediatric literature. So what's happening? So they did this public health review where they looked at hundreds of studies to give us a sense of the direction. And so I want to go through pieces of it and just give you the language that they're talking about. This is an area, if you're in active practice, you're just going to have to watch because the evidence is emerging. But this is what we know as of the beginning of the year with the scientific studies we've looked at. So are these things better for us than traditional cigarettes? They say there is conclusive evidence that completely substituting an e-cig for a traditional cig. So if you're a pack a day and you completely transfer, you're probably getting less toxicants and carcinogens. And that if you completely switch, that you'll probably have less short-term health effects. Okay? So, you know, complete switching. Not dual use, complete switching. So interesting. Okay? What about exposure to nicotine? Doesn't matter. If you put nicotine in the e-cig, you will have the effect of nicotine, which is very addictive. They think, though, that probably the nicotine intake is slightly less than a regular cigarette. So again, kind of weighing this evidence. What about dependence and abuse liability? If you smoke nicotine in them, you'll get dependent on them. And it's probably not just nicotine, but also the habitual activity of smoking. There's moderate evidence that dependence is slightly lower. And there's moderate evidence that it just depends on what's in it. So again, I would say we're going to have to watch that space. We've had 50-some years to study traditional cigarettes. We haven't had that much time for regular users using e-cigarettes. What about exposure to toxic substances? There are toxic substances in the vape liquid. We don't know the long-term health effects. It's taken a long time for us to have public health studies on nicotine and regular cigarettes, so we don't know. But probably what's coming out of the vape is less toxic than what comes out of a regular cigarette. Okay. So when we're updating ourselves on evidence here, it's just a little hard to know exactly what to say. But this is what they've got so far. There's substantial evidence, and this is important for harm, for your patients to educate on. We know that the e-cigs cause injuries and poisonings, and e-cigarette by youth and adults increases their risk of ever using regular cigarettes. And I'll show you a slide on that later, because I think it's very important. I was giving this talk at a clinic, and there was actually a patient who had a third-degree burn in his groin area from his e-cig blowing up in his pocket and getting his jeans on fire, and then he had a third-degree burn that was being treated. So like this, the injuries are happening, and then we have had poisoning in Utah from babies ingesting nicotine. So it's toxic. You've got to be careful. Where is there no or limited evidence or no evidence is on carcinogenity, respiratory effects, and reproductive and developmental effects. Okay, again, we don't have time for this. So we don't have something we can say to our patients about this. Is it safe to do this when I smoke or when I'm pregnant? Okay. Implications of this, the FDA has actually delayed their regulation on e-cigarettes until 2022 because they're not sure if these could be harm reducers. Okay. And I hesitate to, you know, go with this uncertainty, but this is where we're at as a scientific community. We know we need to keep kids away from this. We know that nicotine is addictive, so we can counsel on that. And then there's a lot that we don't yet know. And so it's up to us to keep up on this. A question, are they a cessation aid? This is also I find interesting. Large studies being done. Maybe the studies aren't as good as we'd like them to be. But they found that the odds of quitting cigarettes, so if you're a regular user, were actually 28% lower. Because maybe that dual use, because e-cigs aren't effective for actually getting you off nicotine. So there's a concern there. Again, we need some more evidence on this, but the harm reduction, the cessation aid, at this point, we can't stand behind it strongly, and there's a concern that people actually keep smoking. The pediatric concerns, just want folks to be aware, if you've ever tried e-cigs, your likelihood of trying a conventional cigarette is high. So there's something going on with, you know, likelihood to try. If you don't try e-cigarettes, you're much more likely not to try a conventional cigarette. This is why we really need to counsel the concern with youth. We don't want them starting up on something that leads them to something we do know causes harm, which is traditional cigarettes. Additional concerns, people are putting other stuff in this. Marijuana, THC, other compounds can go in this, and nobody knows what's in that little juice bottle. What should we say? We need to add vaping to our screening. Most of us are asking our patients about tobacco use. We need to use that lingo of vaping or hookah, you know, electronic hookah. Putting that language in there is probably important because vapers don't think they're smokers. I don't know if anybody knows anybody who vapes, but they often don't identify themselves as a smoker. Secondly, we need to use evidence-based smoking cessation, which I'll talk about. At this point, smoking cessation guidelines do not include e-cigarettes. We don't have evidence that these help people quit. And then finally, we want to recommend the avoidance of all smoked tobacco and ENDS and nicotine. We want people who do use vapes to make sure they're safely storing their devices and safely taking them apart so they don't blow up in their pocket. And then we need to follow the results of these trials. So what about ENDS surprises anybody here? Any comments? You guys are kind of a big room. Yes, what's your surprise?
I didn't realize that they all contain nicotine.
So they don't all contain nicotine. So the juice can contain varying components, but I know in Weber County they actually did a study where they look at ones that said they had no nicotine. They have nicotine in them. So we need to keep an eye on regulatory referencing what's in these things, because most likely if you want to sell something over and over, you got to put something addictive in it. People who sell juice know if they put a little nicotine in it, it'll probably make people want to buy it more. So there's a concern what's in them. And so that's a huge issue. But no, they don't necessarily have nicotine. Yeah. Anything else? Anybody want to say a surprise? Yes, surprise. Okay, so we should be careful of what's going in them. People have had drug screens, is that what you said? Come positive, maybe unknowing to the vapor? So known and unknown. So it's not just innocuous nicotine, other substance in it. It could have things as strong as heroin in it, or meth, or cocaine. So yeah, so again, people need to be responsible and know what's in these things. We need to ask. Good. Okay, thank you guys. Okay, helping people quit. Want to make sure you know this. Tobacco dependence is a two-part problem. Nicotine dependence is both physiological and behavioral. We're addicted to nicotine, and we're addicted to a behavior that we do. Physicians and providers, we need to treat both, okay? So we need to address both issues. These are the only FDA smoking cessation medications at this time. If you want a great list with all the dosing, she has 100 copies of these cheat sheets there. Most of us can get this on a drug reference, but just know, these are the only FDA-approved medications. Okay, you don't see e-cigarettes on there. Ask, advise, connect, fairly simple. This is an evidence-based set of referral to treatment that we recommend. So ask everybody at every visit, do you smoke? Do you want to quit? Assess where they're at, okay? Advise, encourage cessation, and ask that their household members quit smoking. A phrase that we could all practice is, the single best thing we can do to improve your health and the health of your family is for you to quit smoking, okay? And we can say that regardless of where they're at. They're going to know we care about their health, and they're going to know that we support them. And then connect. This is important. A proactive referral, actively connecting the patient to cessation in your office right there, you, your assistant, your nurse, doing it right there is going to increase their likelihood of getting to that behavioral support of the quit line. And so we recommend that you do that. Smokers are 13 times more likely to enroll into treatment when they're directly connected to the quit line. So let's make that easy for you. Utah Resources, everybody who's sleeping or getting bored, I want you guys to say 1-800-QUIT-NOW. 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 You won't forget it, okay? You can say it anywhere you are. You can say it to your patient. You can write it down for them. This is the quit line. It's also available in Spanish. What do patients get? They get 5 quit sessions with a trained coach on the phone, 10 if the caller is pregnant, and after pregnancy, they tend to support them postpartum. is multilingual. If you have a patient that has a not Spanish language, sometimes you'll leave a message and they'll call back when they have a counselor in their language. But there's a national system that provides multiple languages. There's no cost to patients. It's supported by our insurance companies, our employers, and our tobacco settlement money. And then there is free nicotine replacement. So if they're eligible, they can actually get mailed packets of patches or gum, which can be really cost effective, and up to 8 weeks of that if there's no contraindications. If they're youth, you can actually prescribe for them and give them recommendations if you have a youth that you want to use that as long as it's safe for them. If they're 18 and older, ready to quit within 30 days, and they have to be enrolled in phone coaching. So lots of options to get people both behavioral support, which is the quitline coaching, and that drug replacement support, which could be nicotine, or you guys can then prescribe the bupropion or varenicline. Way to quit, this changed a little bit how it looks, but up on the top right, there's a box that says healthcare providers. There's a section for us where we can click and get resources that are good for us. And these are the boxes we can hit, okay? I think the cost and coverage, I looked at it lately, we've updated it as of December. If your patient has a certain insurance, you can actually find out what they cover. The Affordable Care Act has asked that everybody be covered for both behavioral and drug therapy for smoking cessation, but sometimes it varies. And we try to keep the cost and coverage updated for all insurances. All right, referring. Yvonne can help you with a very clear set of steps to refer. You can actually get your practice enrolled, so there's an automatic fax or e-referral you can do for patients that then gives you information about whether or not they went to the coaching sessions. So if you want to get set up with that, that's something Yvonne can help connect you to. The patients, they get their referral, the quitline calls them, the client enrolls, they get their materials, they get set up for coaching and NRT if they choose, they get their coaching, and then you can get an outcomes report, which helps you see what your patient's done. I'm going to stop. We have about 5 minutes for questions, or I'm not sure what the timer means. Yeah, we have 5 minutes for questions. My contact information, and again, Yvonne, raise your hand. So she is back straight out the ballroom doors. If you want to see what an e-cig looks like, if you would like drug dosing cards, and if you would like her to set up time to come to your office or one of the other health departments to come to your office to look at this referral or educate your staff on quit, they can do that, and there's a sign-up sheet at her booth. Thank you. Yes, questions?
Comment and a question.
Please.
One is, many patients tell me that the cost of ENDS is a small fraction of what tobacco products is, and that's one of the attractions. My question is, does anybody have any idea of the surgical consequences of ENDS compared to tobacco products, particularly like in orthopedic fusions?
Surgical consequences? Like meaning?
Because smokers do very poorly with an orthopedic fusion. Okay. I just wonder if ENDS has exactly the same or similar problems.
Okay, got it. So what do we know? Nicotine does cause vasoconstriction and decrease in wound healing. So I would say that the nicotine effects could be similar in terms of the vascular effects in a wound. The toxic or carcinogenic effects that are probably going to be more in the respiratory system would be less, but I don't know completely the answer to that. Yeah. But I know the nicotine effects will be the same if there's nicotine in their e-cig. And then secondly, we are trying to pass bills to increase taxation on e-cigarettes so that they cost more. But there have been concerns about, that they're a harm reduction device, and so people are reluctant to tax them higher. Again, I don't know that we know that is completely clear. So I would say our policies for reducing youth initiation would advocate that we have higher taxes. That's my opinion.
What has been the experience of tax with cigarettes in Utah?
So everywhere in the country has seen reduced youth initiation when you make them more expensive. So it works, it's worked nationally. I think in Utah, you see that really minimal decline. We still have a low smoking rate, but nationally, it's been a really landmark public health activity, which is taxing cigarettes reduces youth initiation. And raising the age will likely also help, because who do we get our cigarettes from? It's usually our peers. And that 18 to 21, so likely increasing the age for cigarette purchase to 21 could also reduce youth initiation. So those are two known things that help access for youth. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes. A woman who's 35 and older. So I think the question just is e-cigarette use with contraceptions. I would say at this point, there is not clear evidence, and the advice would be the same as with a traditional cigarette. Yeah, so yep. So the vascular effects are what we're concerned about. That guidance may change, but at this time, it's the same advice. Yeah. Yeah.
Years ago when Congress investigated these cigarette companies, they had hearings and such. One of the strategies for defendants in situations like that is when they get subpoenas and orders and stuff like that, they respond to it by actually burying you in paper. And there was a doctor with one of the Ivy League schools in the East that made it his life work to actually read the paper. And he used to go around and give a lecture somewhat like what you're giving now against the tobacco companies, and it was very eye-opening.
Yeah.
And what I was going to ask is if the manufacturers of the electronic products are adopting a similar defense strategy of fighting the science and various things like that. Oh, one other little comment.
Sure.
People who chew tobacco also don't consider themselves smokers.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great.
But this question, is this one of the defense strategies of these people for the science? And
So what I would say is that you can see from the... I'm not going to say wishy-washy, but the lack of strong evidence that the Science Foundation came up with, I think it's not just the e-cigarette folks that are bearing in paperwork or looking for evidence to their cause. I just think we don't have enough evidence that's good science yet to say either way. So I would say we're both mired in paperwork trying to figure out the answer. And so I would say I think we're all trying to figure this out still. We need better studies, we need more studies, we need long-term studies. But while that's happening, the horse is out of the barn. Yep. Yes?
I've got four teenagers at home, and I hear stories about people doing home-brewed juice with crushed Adderall and CBD oil, things like that. Are there any estimates on the prevalence of home-brewed juice?
Yvonne, do you have any comment on assessments? I think that people are trying to figure out what's in them. That's the what's in your, what substance are you using? Anything recent about that? Okay. So the public health folks are trying to keep tabs on this and trying to stay ahead of, young people and their creativity to know what's in products. So I think Weber, of all the counties, is doing some of the most aggressive look at this, and so Yvonne will have what's current. Thank you. Yeah.
I just a comment. I think it's hard for us to watch people frozen because they don't have specific recommendations to make from somebody. All of us know, having been trained at med school, the nicotinic receptors of the body can be poisoned by nicotine. And these are all the things that happen. Nicotine itself is a natural chemical insecticide used by the plant world to kill insects. And it does that slowly to us by the same methods. Mm-hmm. When we inhale it, the cilia in our respiratory tree is paralyzed. And all those other places where nicotinic receptors are found. I think we should go ahead and boldly say to people who are asking us about this, mm-hmm. why would you take an insecticide and expect good things to happen?
There you go. Good last comment. All right. So thank you guys. Thanks for the questions and dialogue. And keep your eye out.